welcome back to Screen Heroes. We are back in our normal studio after the great flood of 2017.
Okay.
That's what I'm going with. Sure. We are back, though, in our studio for those who like to watch the show or join us live on Tuesday nights on Twitch. If you don't do that, you totally should, because it's lots of fun. You can chat with us. I am Derek. I've got my hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hi.
How you guys doing?
Doing all right. Yeah? How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing all right. Glad to be back for another episode. And this week we're going to be talking about Mel Brooks. We'll be talking about mainly movies that he directed. He's acted in so many. We can't really cover that in an episode. But
because most of his roles are cameos, he's a lot like Stan Lee, where he is more known for his, you know, real life persona than he is any other. So he cameos in a lot of things, and he has a really unique voice. So he does a lot of voiceover work as well, and it tends to be just a couple characters. So
yeah, he was that really round big robot in the Robots movie.
Yes, he was.
Which was a fun surprise, because when I saw the movie, I didn't know that he had voiced a character in it at the time. And that was a fun little surprise.
Was there any news this week that I need to talk about?
So, I mean, small thing happened today. Small for us, but kind of a big deal for his family. Sherman Hemsley died today of the Jeffersons. He was found this morning dead in his 70s. Terribly sad.
That is sad.
Long life, talented actor and comedian, you know, breakthrough for black entertainment in the 1970s. So he lived a cool life, and sad to see him go, but, you know.
Absolutely.
There was another celebrity death yesterday, wasn't there?
Sam Shepard, the playwright, passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he passed away yesterday.
So you know what they say, that it comes in threes, so, you know.
Who's number three?
Sam Shepard.
We'll find out tomorrow, unfortunately.
Is more known behind the scenes than he is in front of as a playwright. And a lot of fellow actors, I guess, were really just very torn apart over it.
Yeah. It was a bummer. He wasn't particularly old. I think it was 73, I think is what he was. You know,
I mean, that's not young.
It's not young, but, you know, it's not
considering the average human's living until 80 now.
I mean, life expectancy 77, 78 in the United States. So my philosophy on life is if you can at least hit that date, then you're hitting, you know, the expected. But, you know, it's still sad either way, no matter what.
Definitely.
I guess in the more like number crunching news, Sony Pictures is still not doing particularly well. They lost $86 million last quarter.
Jesus.
They're going to sell, probably, I imagine, in the next 2 years. They're probably going
to. But to who?
I mean, Disney? They could get a lot of really good properties out of that.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, Ghostbusters is a huge property alone.
And
that's a Sony.
And all the Spider-Man stuff, of course.
Like, as much as, you know, the House of Mouse has some really intense rules, getting blessed by their hand gets you good pictures. So it's not a bad thing to sell to Disney if they would.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to kind of wait and see, because last quarter did not include Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And will not have included The Dark Tower, for example.
Right.
So, you know, there's a chance they'll rebound a bit. It was better than last year's quarter, year over year. But they're still, I mean, while other companies like Disney and Warner Brothers are all doing very, very well, Sony Pictures is not. So, just kind of an interesting little thing there. Next week, we are going to be talking about The Dark Tower.
We're not done
with news.
No.
Okay.
The new photo of Domino dropped.
That's true. Yeah, you can hit up our Instagram for that, at Heroes Podcasts.
Yep.
So Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I think it's really cool. So in the comics, Domino is an African-American black woman who has albinism. So, and she paints on the black on the one eye. In this, it kind of looks like she has vitiligo, the disease where patches of your skin are lighter. So I like that it works the other way around, that it was just you know, I thought it was really cool. A lot of people are saying she looks like Barf from Spaceballs, and I think that's kind of insulting because I don't think she does at all. And
Foxy Cleopatra from Goldmember is another one that I've heard.
That's a little less insulting.
I feel like it's still mildly racist.
Yeah.
But... Oh, no, it's definitely racist, yeah. But it's not as insulting as saying you look like John Candy, may he rest in peace, was not the most attractive person in the world.
I don't think they're saying she looks like him.
No, it's just the white.
The design.
No, I understand the connection. But it makes sense
because, you know, black dominoes have white spots and white dominoes have black spots. So I think it's a cool little twist on it that... The outfit seems, depending on what they do with her powers, the outfit seems appropriate
for Domino. I don't know much about the character, to be honest.
So. Domino's mutant abilities is she has the best luck in the world. So she's an expert marksman because of it and all kinds of
stuff. It'll be really good in the Deadpool universe, I think. It'll be very... Yeah. There's a lot of cool, fun things they can do off of that, yeah.
But, I mean...
She has a romance with Cable a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why she's in it. Fox changed
up... She's a little young for Josh Brolin, though.
She is. That's how Hollywood casts them.
Okay.
But if you are a fan of Deadpool and X-Men, you know that they changed up Negasonic a lot.
They did.
And they changed up Vanessa / Copycat a lot, so, you know.
Which they already kind of ruined Copycat in the first movie.
They did, so. Yeah. There's no way she could go back and actually be Copycat. She'll just always be Vanessa now. And...
But changing Negasonic's not that big of a deal since she's a much lesser known character.
But that's just it. That's my point. Like, if you have an issue with Domino being changed, there's precedent for it already in the
Domino movie.
In the Deadpool movie, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And then one more thing.
Speaking of Deadpool, though.
Oh, Ian McShane. Go ahead.
I was just going to say on the Deadpool thing. They kind of forced Ryan Reynolds to do more, to allow the stuntmen to do more of the work and less of his own stunts for the sequel. So I guess he was getting himself hurt. So they basically told him to let the stunt guys do their thing.
Pull a Viggo Mortensen.
His toe and get the best shot.
Yeah, just like, F you, I'm doing this anyway.
No, I mean, I think, you know, he's got a kid now and stuff like that. So he probably cares a little bit more about those types of things. And maybe. He wants the movie to be successful. And the movie will be difficult. It will be difficult for the movie to succeed if he injures himself significantly.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
That's true.
Anyway... Continue.
Last bit. Ian McShane was just confirmed for Hellboy Rise of the Blood Queen, which that's a fantastic title, don't get me wrong, but I'm still a little bitter that it's not Ron Perlman. That is just straight up petty bitterness. Like, I'm not going to deny it. I want reboots for so many things, but not Hellboy.
Ian McShane, for those who don't know, is in the first season of American Gods.
He plays most Blackbeard recently. In Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. He's done quite a few things, but he's been in the geek community. This is nothing new.
No, it's not. I was just saying that recently he did the first season of American Gods, and he's featured heavily in it. Yes. So if you'd like to see some of his more recent work, that would be something I would point you to. So that was all.
Great.
There is, I think, a small convention in Las Vegas happening this weekend. I don't remember what the name of it is, but...
It's Star Trek Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's the biggest Star Trek convention in America.
Did you see one of our friends is featured?
No, I didn't see that.
Frank's featured, so good for him.
Dr. Bones. I don't know what his cosplay name is. I think it's Bones McCoy.
It is, yes.
Bones McCoy cosplay was on the advert.
He's not a real doctor. So
ladies.
If he says he's going to take a look at that for you, don't believe him. Well, I mean, he probably still will, but for a medical reason.
For those wondering why Ryan may be plugging a particular topic, this has to do with what we did for Patreon in the month of July, which was... if we got a certain amount of contribution, which we did, so thank you for the first tier.
Yeah.
Thank you very much to our contributors for that. If I said anything in reference to a particular fandom, then I would have to...
I was hoping you were going to do it!
...sing lyrics, music, from ABBA.
Yeah.
And so I've got my lyric sheets here, because it turns out I actually know very little of ABBA's music. I just, in my head, thought I knew
He knows
more
one
of it.
Song.
I know one
exact.
Song, yeah.
And he just knows the chorus of it.
Like, yeah, I'm realizing that I think because I was thinking of Asia, not ABBA. Okay. Asia. And I do know more of Asia's music because I do have...
That's kind of weird.
I have one of their okay. I have one of their LPs, so...
Okay.
That makes me want to quote 40-year-old version, but that's so dated now. Like, that's such an offensive quote at this point that, yeah. like, I just can't do it anymore.
It's all good.
Anyway.
So that's that.
Good for Ryan and I. Nobody pledged for second and third tier, for that. So yeah. I do not have to write a love letter to The Rock.
That's right.
No, but we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/heroespodcast.
To listen for that.
Yeah, but I thought maybe you could kind of tell people.
You want me to dive into that before we even talk
about it?
Let's talk about Mel Brooks.
People are here to listen to the topic, not to our Patreon pitch. If they want, they'll hang around and listen to that.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
All right, so first up, we're going to talk about the producers.
Do you want to explain to people kind of how we broke this up?
Sure. So usually when we feature a person or, you know, we talk about our top whatever, we kind of divvy up the work, and I will be presenting to you producers and History of the World Part 1, and then Derek's going to take care of
Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles.
That's right. And your Spaceballs and Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
We pretty much are leaving out Silent Movie and High Anxiety.
Yes.
And Dracula Dead and Loving It.
And 12 Chairs.
Yes.
So.
And Spaceballs, the animated series.
We can talk about that.
Okay.
And the History of the World Part 2, Jews in Space. Which I was very sad was never made as a Jewish person. So. But we might be getting Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money.
It's currently
in pre-production, so.
But it has been for a couple years now, so we'll see.
We'll see. All right, well, so then go ahead, Ray. Why don't you kick us off then with the producers. Which the producers are you going to talk about?
All right, so I'm going to talk about the 1967, but I'm also going to talk about the 2005 one because I really love that one. What's so funny?
Oh, in chat I asked what everyone's favorite Mel Brooks film was, and so far we've got Blazing Saddles, Ryan was very meh about. And then we
not
also
his best
got
movie, but...
Robin Hood Men in Tights, which I actually just watched really recently because it's great. And that just made me chuckle because of how recently I watched that one. So,
all right.
Derek is a huge fan of coincidence, so...
I do enjoy
it cracks him up and...
Coincidence and puns.
Yes.
Yes.
I try to enjoy the small things in life, Ryan.
Okay. Good talk.
Are you going to talk about the producers?
Yeah. I just really wanted to quote Bender and be like, you're Wiener.
Okay.
You can. We're not explicit, but Wiener isn't explicit, so.
Anyway, so the producers. That was filmed in 1967, so the oldest movie on our list by far.
Mm-hmm.
And features the comedy stylings of Gene Wilder. Really...
He's in a lot of these movies.
Yes. If you haven't seen it, the movie is about two producers who come up with this scheme to make more money off of a flop and then run away with it before the IRS can catch them. And it's pretty ingenious how they do it, but they still get caught. You know, that's just
spoiler alert.
Goes.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, no.
I've actually never seen the producers, so.
It's really
neither of them?
So you say neither of them, because in 2001, there was a Broadway musical where Mel Brooks redid the whole thing, had Nathan Lane and, that one guy killed a guy in a car wreck. Matthew Broderick. Yeah, that's it. Star. And then,
Little Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, Little Ferris Bueller.
Little cable guy.
And.
Well, I guess he wasn't the cable guy, but.
In 2005, he redirected the movie, and there's a 2005 version of the Broadway musical.
Did he direct that one?
I
thought he just produced it.
I'm pretty sure he directed it.
I'm pretty sure he didn't.
Ooh. Derek's going to look that up.
Anyway,
keep going, Rachel.
IMDb is also fairly confident.
John Barrowman stars in that.
Are you going to check that out with IMDb real quick?
No, dude.
Okay.
He has proof, because we were at a John Barrowman panel, and he talked about it.
And then the curtain fell on him.
And the curtain fell.
Yeah, that was sad. Anyway, moving on.
Moving on. Yes, producers. Hilarious. Gene Wilder really, like, he didn't have too much work before this that was notable. This really stood out, and he played a very high-functioning, anxious person, very neurotic, and, I mean, now we would diagnose those tendencies as some sort of mental disorder, probably two or three of them, but back then it was, haha, let's poke fun at the weird guy, and it was great. Gene Wilder did such a great job, and when I saw the 2005 version, I didn't know if Matthew Broderick was going to be able to fill his shoes and be just as fun and neurotic, but he totally was. He did such a great job, too. He played it a little more mousy than Gene Wilder did, but...
Matthew Broderick is a pretty underrated actor, in my opinion.
He really is.
I'm surprised he didn't get more work.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's sad to think that, like, he peaked in his teen years, but he has a great singing voice, so he does Broadway work all the time.
He was wonderful in The Lion King.
Yeah, he was grown up Simba.
He was great in Cable Guy also.
He was. So, yeah.
That's, I'm a mega fan of that movie. So.
Leslie Mann, not so much, but Matthew Broderick and Jim Carrey, top notch.
Probably Jim Carrey's best movie, in my opinion.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's for another day, but we'll, yeah.
That would be a fun one to talk about, actually.
Now,
that's a huge reference to that one movie. I can't remember the name of it.
You're welcome. Talking about Gene Wilder, I mean, he's kind of a favorite of Mel Brooks, as was Madeline Kahn.
You see, everybody wants to give Tim Burton crap for always hiring the same actors, but directors have been doing this since the 60s. Like, it's...
But maybe it's less noticeable with others because... Tim Burton's style is so specific. Like, Mel Brooks's movies are all over the place. They all look different. They all sound different.
Well,
Gene Wilder's characters were all drastically different.
That's true.
Especially in the two movies that I'll be talking about. So, I mean...
Yeah, you've got two Gene Wilder films.
Johnny Depp in a Tim Burton movie is basically the same.
Every time.
That's the complaint.
And even outside of Tim Burton movies, a lot of the time.
Well, I don't know that.
It's a blockbuster, like, his Tonto was pretty bad.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
I feel bad for Armie Hammer, who played a really good Lone Ranger, but his Tonto was bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's The Producers. Okay. I really enjoy it. I think it's not his best work as a... director, but it's definitely one of the fun ones.
So it's not your favorite Mel Brooks movie.
He did not peak at 1967. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, then I guess I'll go next if we want to go chronologically.
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, next then I will do Young Frankenstein, which was 1974. Also stars Gene Wilder and Madeline Kahn, who I love. And this movie is my favorite Mel Brooks movie.
This movie also got adapted to...
A musical, which is really, really good. So they had to add some scenes, and there's some really great musical numbers that they added to it. And it's great. So you have an opportunity to see it.
Didn't Megan Mullally originally play Madeline Kahn's...
I have no idea.
On the Broadway show.
You're getting pretty obscure there.
Yeah. Will and Grace.
Yeah.
She was also
in Parks and Rec.
Yeah. She.
Sorry.
Tammy, too.
What was the name?
Megan Mullally.
Oh.
Married to,
Ron Swanson.
To Ron Swanson. To Nick Offerman.
Yeah.
No. I didn't see it on Broadway. I saw it here in Kansas City.
Oh, okay. My bad.
So I can't answer that.
That's totally fair. If someone's going to take over Madeline Kahn's role, like, Megan Mullally is pretty awesome. So.
They could do worse, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, so Young Frankenstein has a really solid cast outside of Gene Wilder and Madeline Kahn. You've got Peter Boyle, who most people probably know him from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
He played Ray's dad. This was, you know... obviously a very different kind of role for him. He played Frankenstein's monster. Much younger. And Marty Feldman plays Igor, which is just a wonderful incarnation of that character. Like, this movie is my favorite version of Frankenstein, just across the board. I love the whole thing. You talked earlier about how much I love puns, and there's just a ton of that in Mel Brooks movies in general, but specifically in Young Frankenstein.
So one of my favorite things that he does really well in this is the dialogue, because there's so many of that, you know, comedy of errors mismatched back and forth. The Frederick and Igor instead of Igor.
Why isn't it Frederick Frankenstein?
Yeah.
It's Frederick Frankenstein.
Yeah, I
like that kind of stuff.
It's really good.
I'm a dialogue guy. It's what I love most about movies. And so this one, just the story is great. Seeing it in black and white is a lot of fun. And I was always like, I was confused when I first got the movie because I bought it and the back of the movie shows all the scene clips in color. And so I bought the movie and I put in the movie, the whole thing's in black and white. And I'm so glad that it is, because I definitely think that that adds to the tone and the style of the movie. There's some fun little notes about it, like the blind man is actually Gene Hackman, which is pretty funny for anybody who didn't know that. And that's one of my favorite scenes, where the blind man's trying to talk to the Frankenstein monster that can't speak is just really great. So just the comedy across the board is really wonderful for me. The set designs are really cool because they couldn't just shoot this anywhere, you know, so they had to, you know, there's the castle and there's the staircases and you've got the whole little village and the cemetery and there's all these different spots. The classroom, the college classroom at the beginning of the movie where he's teaching the lecture, and so I really feel like they did a really great job. And considering it was only his third directorial movie, the budget couldn't have been anything amazing, so I think it makes it that much more impressive.
In interviews, Cloris Leachman always says that it's her favorite role because it's the one she can still play if she wanted to.
Right? Yeah, they kind of aged her up in that one.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
And I didn't get the horse joke until I was a little bit older.
I got it younger because my dad explained it to me.
Oh, yeah.
I always found that funny. I thought I kind of knew the in joke because I didn't know it was a joke really until he explained it to me. But yeah. And then the musical number with the monster is so good. Oh, one of the best moments in cinema, in my opinion. It's just a really great scene.
It does get featured around a lot in like best ofs that, you know, AFI does, which is the American Film Institute. Not a crappy scene band.
It's not BuzzFeed.
No. But yeah, that scene is really wonderful. It's a great musical number, and it's a lot of fun. I enjoy the whole movie all the way through from beginning to end. Whereas I feel like a lot of Mel Brooks's films kind of go off the rails at certain points. And that's on purpose. I know it's on purpose. But it doesn't always connect with me. And Young Frankenstein connects with me literally from the first scene until the end, the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about the train sequence when he's saying goodbye to his wife, who's played by Madeline Kahn. And they're having that cute little moment. And it's cute for him, but it's totally not cute for her at all. And it's just, I love it. I love the whole thing. So if you haven't seen Young Frankenstein, I really think it's his best work.
Wow.
It's a great movie. Best work, debatable, but yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's opinion, but
yeah.
It's really a fun one. The music is really good, too. It's got a really good soundtrack to it that...
I don't know how many times I've hit on a guy by asking him if he wants to take a Zrozi, hey?
Yeah?
Yeah.
You never use that one on me.
Yeah, it's weird. I've never heard you use that on Derek, and I've been around you guys a lot.
That's fine.
Guess what's happening tonight?
I make a lot of Young Frankenstein references. Late at night when it's time for bed, sometimes I ask her if she wants some warm milk or Ovaltine.
You go,
I do not.
Okay. While she's singing and it goes to the cue for the chorus.
I will say one of my favorite moments is at towards the end of the movie when Madeline Kahn dresses up as the Bride of Frankenstein.
Yes.
I love that. So and she good. Does, like, the whole, like, hissing thing and everything. She's got the hair. It's just...
So good.
It's so good. She's one of my favorite actors of all time, so that definitely helps. As is Gene Wilder, so the movie's really a good fit for me.
Mm-hmm. Great film.
All right, Ryan, what is your first Mel Brooks movie on your list?
Since we're going... chronologically.
But we can't, I mean, if we go chronologically, then I'm next, and that's confusing.
Right.
So.
Well, we're going chronologically on each of our lists, which makes it more confusing. But
you kind of have, it's interesting, you've got the end of his career, and I've kind of got the beginning, and Ray kind of is in the,
yeah, that's true.
You know, kind of split, so.
Okay.
Moving on.
It's very interesting, Derek.
I like dates.
Spaceballs. Good movie.
This is Ray's least favorite, I think, of all the Mel Brooks films.
Which is unfortunate, but she wasn't a big Star Wars fan growing up.
Eight that we have here, or six that we have here, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, Rachel wasn't a huge Star Wars fan growing up. She didn't get into it until later into her life. True. So maybe
it was really YouTube that got me into it. So
This movie came out in 87, so 4 years after Return of the Jedi. So it was in a pretty good position to be a good satire of the whole Star Wars movement that kind of happened in the late 70s and early 80s. Had some a great talent that he didn't use in any of his other movies. Namely,
fantastic cast.
Rick Moranis would be the big one for me, but Bill Pullman, John Candy, Rick Moranis makes me sad that he doesn't act anymore. I mean, I understand why, but it's his comedy in that movie, that and Ghostbusters. I mean, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh man, Rick Moranis was the man growing up. Like, I don't know how many times I watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Come on,
this was kind of like in his heyday.
Yeah,
you know, he had already done Ghostbusters a few years earlier, of course, and
did Ghostbusters 2 a few years later.
It was well done with Second City and the Canadian show he hosted. I don't know if you guys saw it; it was really funny.
I never watched it. I'm aware of it.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it is interesting because you know we talked about Mel Brooks tends to reuse a lot of actors, and Spaceballs is pretty much an entire new cast other than himself.
Yeah. Which he does put himself in most of his movies.
And several of them,
it seems like. At least both of the ones on my list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's in both of them.
I feel like he did it, like, as time went on, he did it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, my next one, he's the main character in
versus, like, you know, he's not in Young Frankenstein. But
so if you're not familiar with Spaceballs, it's basically a spoof of the Star Wars movies. Darth Vader has a direct ripoff. Yoda has a direct ripoff. Luke Skywalker has a direct ripoff in the movie. And they know that, and they acknowledge the fact that, you know, that they're in it for the merchandising and, like, all these jokes at this expensive Lucasfilm and the Star Wars.
Spaceballs the flamethrower.
Yeah. Yeah, yogurt was great. That was Mel Brooks, one of Mel Brooks' roles in that movie. The other one was President Scrooge.
Right.
Which is great, so...
Because it's Brooks, backwards.
Joan Rivers.
I
did not know that. That is embarrassing.
Come on, Derek.
I never looked at the name. I never thought about it. I thought it was a joke about, like, being screwed.
Okay.
So.
Well, sometimes you have to explain things to Derek. Everything has, I mean, there's lightsabers that instead of coming out of a hilt, it comes out of a ring. I mean, there's the Force is like a beverage, apparently. The Schwartz.
It's liquid
the
Schwartz.
Force.
It's liquid Schwartz.
Yeah. Which implies that there's other forms of it. Maybe gas Schwartz and
I hear it's
solid
candy
Schwartz.
Bar form.
Probably. That's probably what the Spaceballs candy bar was made of.
Nice.
Probably.
Anyway, great movie. John Candy is another one I forgot to mention, but yeah, he was also great in that movie. The scene with Dark Helmet playing with the little action figures is completely improv by Rick Moranis. Yeah. I mean, that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and for him to have improv that is really great. So,
Definitely one of my favorite scenes in the movie, too. My absolute favorite scene in the movie is the videotape one.
Oh, yeah.
You're looking at now. Everything is happening now is happening now. That is one of my favorite scenes in any movie ever, because I just think it's brilliant. Instant cassette. Like, it's just, the whole idea was amazing.
Fast forward.
Because you know that if the movie companies could do it, they would do that, if that was possible. And I love that. I always thought that was great. But you forgot Michael Winslow's in
Michael
it, too.
Michael Winslow, yeah. Not a big role, but...
Who provides some great special effects. And there's a nice little anecdote about sound effects, about how actually he saved the movie money because he could do the effect noises and they didn't have to pay somebody to produce them. So
we've been jammed. Yeah, love that. Everything about that movie is great.
I think that movie has the most, like, classic one-liners of all of the Mel Brooks films.
You're probably right on that. Although Robin Hood Men Tights would be pretty close, probably.
That's true.
I feel like Spaceballs is easier to quote. I just
probably,
you know. But yeah, so great, great movie. I love Spaceballs. That was my favorite one growing up until I got a little bit older and I started appreciating Young Frankenstein a little bit more.
Yes.
But as a kid, totally Spaceballs, no question.
Yeah, that one was the one I was most familiar with growing up, so totally agree.
Okay, Ray.
All right.
We're on to your next movie then.
Okay, so this one is my favorite. It is not the best. I totally admit that, but it's my favorite. And it's because it's the one I grew up on, which says a lot about my childhood because it's very inappropriate. And I got in trouble by yelling all the time that my tits were going to fall off.
History I can of the see how that would make people panic.
Yeah. History of the World Part 1. Absolutely fantastic. One of the ones that's a great example of it going off the rails at the end.
Yes.
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 Once he decides to stop doing the period pieces, like, yeah. So all of his movies, except for really The Producers, are satires or parodies of something. You know, there's the parody of the silent film and parody of
the western
I mean, High Anxiety is a parody of Alfred Hitchcock, and this one's kind of a parody of all the period pieces, and
literally all of them,
all of them. Every single one. All of them. I mean, it starts one of my favorite scenes in cinema. It starts by copying off of 2001 A Space Odyssey by showing the Neanderthals and the rise of the sunsets, or rise of the sun. And
I'm trying to name one of the new Planet of the Apes movies.
Yes, exactly. Rise of the Sunset.
That's going to be the next
of
one.
Of the Apes.
That's right.
Well, and instead of, you know, the first thing they do being violence, the first thing they do is masturbate. Just very intense, like, they just lift their hands over their head and just go straight at it. And it was hilarious. I laughed so hard at that. It's so
good. You are a sucker for masturbation humor.
I mean, Mel Brooks does it well. I, like...
Fair enough. I guess only he would know.
You know? I mean, I want to say that... if you're going to make dick and fart jokes, make them well, you know? Like, if that's all you're going to do.
That's your entire shtick, yeah.
Yeah.
Make it count.
Fair enough.
But they also have the French Revolution with Count de Monet. And they have biblical times where he's actually painting the Last Supper. Or somebody else is painting The Last Supper, like Leonardo da Vinci's there painting it, and he's the server at the restaurant, and he's trying to take their order.
Which is great.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is when Mel Brooks is Moses, and he comes down with the 15 commandments. And
10 commandments!
I just really hope that's how it happened. That would make me happy.
I'm not gonna burst any bubbles on the show, but...
The Spanish Inquisition was always my favorite part. It was
that sounds
just...
about right.
Shut up.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. So.
It was a 10-minute just musical about Takamata and the Spanish Inquisition. And, I mean, I know the Spanish Inquisition was a terrible thing, don't get me wrong, but aren't we far enough removed that we can make jokes?
It's too soon, right?
Too soon.
Oh, God, you guys. Madeleine Kahn was in it as this...
Empress Nympho, I think is her name.
Yes.
Yeah. That was pretty funny.
And
she usually plays some kind of sexual being in her movies, so.
In Mel Brooks' films that he cast her in, absolutely. Yeah.
Even in Clue. She did have like 5 husbands that were hers and then others.
Please.
You know, I'm just saying. So.
Loved her. Yeah.
I have a feeling this month it's going to be Clue references from Derek instead of that other film franchise and TV franchise.
The one thing that's really sad about History of the World Part 1 is that we get the teaser for Part 2 and it's never made.
Yes, they do have...
That's in several movies that have in Spaceballs too, right?
Yes.
Well, but Spaceballs just has the throwaway line. History of the World Part 1 has like a trailer for Part 2. I mean, you know, it's Jews in space, and they actually show the spaceship, and there's Stars of David. It's great. You know, and Spaceballs is just like a throwaway line. God willing, we'll all meet again in Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money.
There's so much that goes on in History of the World Part 1. I think that's why it's one of my favorites, is you know, we've talked about a ton of different stuff already, and I can keep going. Is, you know, Dom DeLuise is in there, and he's great.
I
feel like it's the one that holds up the least. It's
really?
It's not very good to watch now in a more accepting, tolerant culture. I mean, there's gay jokes that probably shouldn't have happened, and there's a whole scene where they joke about raping the French queen. So parts of it are a little more difficult to watch now as an adult, but I like to look back on what I remember as a kid and have my adult self recognize that there are certain parts of that movie that are not okay, and they never were okay. People just let them by.
Right, yeah.
So.
That's an interesting point. That's fair. Yeah.
Comedy always tries to push barriers, and some people don't like it, and some people do, and
yeah,
you know.
And you're always going to have that argument of what's worse, suppressing creativity and freedom of speech, or alienating and offending. Expensive.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. It's going to be a back and forth, and, you know, Mel Brooks doesn't push those buttons anymore. I mean, even in the movies after that, he didn't push those buttons, so.
No, no, not really. They were a little bit lighter. I mean, Spaceballs, you know, doesn't really have any of that kind of stuff.
Robin Hood Men in Tights, they make references to the Merry Men being gay all the time, and it's done in such a comedic way that it doesn't ever come off as offensive, at least not to me. I don't know.
Well, oh, yeah.
I don't think it was done in a way that was offensive, but I'm not gay, obviously, so I can't, you know, I can't be offended. Obviously. I mean, if I was offended, what would it matter?
Having heterosexual sex right now on the podcast.
Right, so. Well, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not actually doing that for the audio. Really, I'm just sitting here.
I really feel like there would be different noises.
Just... I can't confirm or deny.
Fair enough. So my next movie.
Rachel's very uncomfortable.
I am.
Also came out in 1974 with Young Frankenstein, which is kind of crazy to think about. And that's Blazing Saddles, which is another movie that probably doesn't hold up all that well. It's
you could not make that movie today.
That's the thing. Like the
you could still make History of the World Part 1 and just cut a few parts. You could not make this movie today.
I mean, the whole point of Blazing Saddles is racism. That's the whole point of the movie, and it's done in such a way to show that racism is a bad thing. But yeah, you could not make that movie today. It just wouldn't work. It's another Gene Wilder film. Madeline Kahn is also in it, though not featured quite as heavily as some of the other ones. And then,
what woman doesn't relate to the "I'm Tired" song? Like, that song, man, that's our anthem.
Fair enough.
I don't hear a lot of women singing it for it being their anthem. But
it's actually the password to get into our all-women...
Well, why would you say that on the podcast? Now it's out there. You guys are going to have to change the password.
Yeah, they have to change it every 90 days.
Oh, okay.
It's true. We have a ton of men that just sneak into our Wonder Woman showings. So.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
The star is actually Cleavon Little, who hasn't really done a whole lot after that movie. He did a few things before that. He was in Vanishing Point. And I thought he was great. I actually think he's one of the best parts of the movie. I think he's
absolutely
a fantastic lead and carries the role really, really well. I mean, he has most of the dialogue. Mm-hmm. While Gene Wilder is great, his contribution to the film is much smaller. And so I was always kind of sad that he didn't do more stuff. But Blazing Saddles is my perfect example of a movie that doesn't know when to end. And this movie goes off the rails more than any of the other Mel Brooks movies because they end up going to the movie to watch the movie, which is what they did in Spaceballs, but not as well. Like, Spaceballs perfected it,
yeah,
right? but, you know, at the end of Blazing Saddles, when there's the big riot and they end up going out of their stage onto another one and they start, you know, breaking into the cafeteria where the people are, and it just explodes from being a movie to being, like, about the making of the movie, and are these really, do they know that they're characters?
And
are
then
they
all
actors?
Of a sudden, Dom DeLuise is choreographing.
Sounds like steam escaping.
Sorry.
But that's my point, though, is like at that point in the movie, like, do the characters still know that they're characters? Are they the actors at this point? You know, there's some go off screen fighting, they come back on, and they're in a good mood again. There's the pie throwing.
It was just, meta before being meta was cool.
I guess. Right. Like, it's too meta to make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, at the end, they end up at the the walk of the star, the hall star.
So if you just want to turn the movie off at 75% in, you're not going to lose too much. Like, you still get the whole story.
Basically, like, you know, after they set off the dynamite, you know, and all the fake town starts collapsing and they go after him, you can stop right there and it's just, it's great. But it's kind of like Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, the drugs, you know, kicked in too hard. And they didn't really know what to do at that point in the movie.
The runtime was too low, so they had to...
They had to pat it.
Yeah, pat it a little bit, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But one of the reasons I love Blazing Saddles, it's still one of my favorite movies, is that has a lot to do with the costuming and the sets and things like that. Because it really looks like a Western.
Help that poor man!
They're so very dumb. but so much about it is really, it's bright and it's vivid. I love the costume that Little is wearing the whole time. That kind of tan cowboy suit is just...
Oh, he looks so,
so cool. So I could never pull that off, you know?
I think you could.
Yeah, you think so? But Mel Brooks is in it. He plays the mayor who always gets a warped paddle in whatever that game is called.
The paddleball?
Paddleball. Yeah, there you go. And it's just
ball in a cup.
It's just a lot of fun. You know, Harvey Korman, of course, is, I guess, really the co-star of the film, really, I would say, and plays just a great bad guy.
Yeah, he does.
A really, really good bad guy till the very end, and that's wonderful. Gene Wilder plays an incredibly different character from the one he played earlier that year in Young Frankenstein.
And from producers. They're all three incredibly different.
Very drastically different characters, which shows what kind of actor that he is. It was really,
well,
really
if
good.
We didn't know that already, then...
Yeah.
I mean, I think we had a pretty good idea.
But that was really, I mean, these two movies, Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles, were my real introductions to him as an actor. And, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Willy Wonka.
How dare you, Derek? We're on a movie podcast right now.
To be fair, the book's called Charlie and the Chocolate
Factory. We did get a comment in chat saying that someone's favorite scene is from Blazing Saddles.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When the new sheriff is showing up to the town. On a personal level, I actually did something similar to that in a duet that I did in high school in forensics. Because there was a duet I did with my buddy and my buddy Tosin, and I had to say that word a lot, and I refused to say it. So he said it in exchange, he would cut me off and say it, like, we balanced it out well, and it's kind of I got the idea from Blazing Saddles, so.
Do you think that was your comedy peak?
That was not comedy.
Okay.
That was a very serious duet. We ended up in a physical altercation and stuff. But it did bring a little bit of levity to the beginning of a very serious and intense little play. So,
answer the man. Was that your comedy peak?
Yeah, I mean, I still think my question is
valid. Obviously, it was my steam escaping joke on this episode.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's all downhill from there. I've never seen Rachel laugh that hard at anything.
Ever. I'm not clearly a happy person. No, like, this doesn't happen.
Can't confirm.
Anyway, what are you guys' thoughts on Blazing Saddles?
Oh, I love Blazing Saddles. Yeah, it's great. So much fun. It was actually one of the first movies the three of us all watched together.
Mm-hmm.
We watched it down here in the basement while we were all working on costumes.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't really work on costumes. We watched the movie because it's a good movie.
That's what it ended up being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, cutting foam gets tedious, so...
It does, that's true.
You get little spots all over your hands from the permanent marker.
You burn yourself with a hot glue gun. And you...
Or you get glue all over yourself. And...
Or on the table.
And then you're unhappy with your helmet sizing.
You just take your damn thing apart.
Well, because it just kept shrinking every
step. Okay, Derek, we're not talking about cosplay. Jeez.
All right, well then let's move on then, Ryan, to your last film.
Yes. My last film, 1993. I think kind of the last film of the... I mean, he made other things, but nobody really talks about much about any of his stuff after Robin Hood Men in Tights. And so that was kind of his last...
Really last parody, last satire.
I mean, I think that was his last major production. Right. Because he only directed one more movie after that, and that was Dracula Dead and Loving It. With
Leslie Nielsen,
who is another comedy guy that I absolutely loved. But I've seen the movie, and it was no Naked Gun, I'll tell you that. So.
Well, the Never.
What does that mean?
Okay, so I never really enjoyed the Naked Gun movies. I didn't. I'm sorry, guys. I just didn't. But
it's probably too dumb of humor for it, because it was some dumb humor in those movies.
But the truth is, like, if you're saying that it's no Naked Gun... That means it's not even anywhere close to being a Mel Brooks movie. So.
It's better than Naked Gun 33 and a third. I'll say that.
Naked Gun 33 and a
third. Really? Yeah. You like that one?
Yeah. I mean, it's not my favorite one of those movies, but...
I thought it was the weakest one.
But... I think I liked that one because I actually saw that one in theaters.
Oh, yeah?
I remember my parents took me to that one. Maybe not the best choice, but...
I never saw it in
theaters. I don't remember how old I was at the time. It was probably fun.
Fair enough. But anyway.
Robin Hood Man Tights. Parody of... Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie,
yes.
That came out, I think, Thieves. Within a year or so of that, yeah. Somewhere in there. Fun fact, Sean Connery was the king in the Kevin Costner movie, and he wanted to be the king also in Robin Hood Man in Tights, but he wanted to do it in drag. And also he wanted to get paid $1 million, but all that money was going to go to some charity, and they couldn't afford him. So
that's a shame.
Yeah.
That would have been fun to see, actually. That would have been a nice little connection.
Yeah.
But we did get Patrick Stewart, and that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, we could take him as a, you know, slightly worse second. But
Sure.
I mean, it would be nice to have Sean Connery, because Patrick Stewart was so busy filming that one show.
That show?
Yeah, that one show.
Can't ever remember what it's called.
That, like, he couldn't it dedicate very good, more though. Of his time.
I know I didn't like the show that much. I was kind of disappointed in the show.
Do you think his role was that small because of his schedule?
Oh, totally. That show really took over his whole life.
Yeah, I get what you're trying to do, but from a legitimate question standpoint, you think they would have expanded the role for somebody else?
Probably.
Maybe. Really?
I mean, maybe if they had a better
actor. Because the whole point is
King
that...
King Richard doesn't have a lot to do in all of the Robin Hood fairy tale. However, King Richard was a real person. Robin Hood was a real person. They could have changed up the movie if they had an actor.
But the whole premise is that he's not there, and so these guys are in charge and ruining everything. Yeah. So if he's there, then what's the plot of the film?
It's a Mel Brooks movie. We don't put that much thought into it.
Right.
I do.
The beginning was the Crusades still actors, where they were with
King Richard. I guess they could have shown the Crusades, but that would have been very expensive.
I mean, they already did show the Crusades. He was in the Crusades. That's where he met Isaac Hayes, Achieve's dad.
They didn't show the Crusades. They showed a prison.
Right, but that's where King Richard was.
No, I know. So I'm saying it would have been expensive.
He's just shutting you down. Like, it's not very nice.
I'm just saying it would have been expensive to show the Crusades, because you have to show battles and you have to have more people.
Oh my God. Like, he was where King Richard was. He went to battle with King Richard. King Richard could have been in the prison with him. It would have been fine.
But they would have saved $1 million anyway by not having Sean Connery, so maybe they could use some of that money.
I don't think they saved $1 million,
but
they saved
probably
Connery.
A significant amount of money, I imagine.
But right. I thought
we're
the
talking
whole...
a lot about stuff that's not in the movie.
Yeah, that's
true.
Not relevant
all right, fine.
At all.
Robin Hood, go.
Yeah.
Go.
Good movie. Cary Elwes.
Cary Elwes, yeah. Yeah.
He's always good in everything. I mean, they should have put him in more things.
This is my favorite one of his, actually.
Is it?
It is.
Not Wesley?
Princess Bride?
It's not. Look, I love The Princess Bride. Princess Bride is absolutely one of my favorite movies. But the cast, the group is so strong together that I don't think any one of them particularly stands out much more than the others. I think they're all great. But in this one, he's the lead, and he leads the whole film, and he's really wonderful throughout the whole thing. So it's my favorite role of his.
Okay.
I mean, you're allowed that opinion, but I think it might be wrong. I mean, Cary Elwes is great. You got Dave Chappelle at 19
gosh.
Years old.
So young.
I think that was his first role in anything. Yeah. Tracy Ullman. You got Patrick Stewart, which you already mentioned. Lots of names now that are more popular than they were at the time that movie was made.
But, absolutely.
Just a brilliant, brilliant comedy. I think that it being his last kind of film that anybody can name is okay, because it's right up there with his greatest. I mean, you could put it in the top three and nobody would bat an eye, probably.
I wouldn't argue with you. You probably have really good points. I mean, Lincoln may be one of the best written comedic characters of all time. Like,
so good.
Did you say Abe Lincoln? No, I said Abe Lincoln!
I love how he's basically Ringo.
Yeah.
Like, you fix your boobs. Like a bleeding Picasso.
That's a good point. Lincoln was really fantastic.
So good.
Yeah, and Little John, like with the stick, that stick scene, so good. Such
we
a
get
great
no
fight.
Toes.
It was like slapping.
We don't get no rolls.
I made that up.
He's like drowning in the tiny, like, puddle of water.
It ain't the Mississippi.
So good. I'm on one side. Now I'm on the other side.
I'm on the east side. I'm on the west side.
Yeah, so good. We're just going to quote the movie. Quote for the rest.
It is very quotable compared to some of the other ones. For me, not quite as much as Spaceballs, but it is a very quotable movie.
I don't know. I bet the three of us could only recite that one from start to finish than we could any of the others.
Probably.
I could do Spaceballs.
All right, do it.
Derek. What's the first line?
I want you to read the crawl, too. Like, you have to have the crawl memorized.
She went from suck to blow. Anyway, even in the future, nothing works. No, but Robin Hood Men in Tights has a lot of really great visual gags. You know, like the creek scene, for example.
The mole
that keeps moving. I have a mole. And, like, that's one of his best acted lines in the whole movie, too. Like, you really believe. He has no idea that that's there. But even, like, you know, when he, earlier on in the film, when he's saving Achu and he's got the arrows and they're all attached to each other, you know, like, just stuff like that.
I really love, like, the small things. Like, when he goes to stroke his goatee and, like, all the hair falls out. Like, what the hell? Small things like that that you never imagine popping up. It's just really good.
Doc Rev likes when Dave Chappelle says, "All right, honkies, time in." When he's losing air in his shoes, he's got to pump up.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
I really wanted a pair of those shoes after I saw that movie.
Yes.
So
I'm not surprised.
No?
Did you have one?
No.
I really loved that at the same time they also parodied the fact that there was rap music for every movie back then. Like, Adam's Family, Space Jam, like, they all had a rap, and...
The rap is so good!
And Mel Brooks wrote all the songs for that movie.
Really? So. Oh, that's great, I didn't know that.
Also, that movie made Gene Siskel of Siskel and Ebert, it made his worst of 93 list.
Well,
Are you kidding me?
Nope. It's funny we look at that as a classic, but yeah, back then he...
Wow.
It was very poorly reviewed by him, apparently.
I never liked him.
Critics tend to be really harsh on parody stuff.
Comedies.
Yeah,
you know?
Comedies. Unless it's a romantic comedy, right?
Well, so Judd Apatow makes The Big Sick, and it's a good movie. But I think Judd Apatow, as a whole, and I can say this knowing that he can't affect my career right now, is very overrated. You know, I think... Seth Rogen doing dick and fart jokes is just overrated because he does them in every movie. But The Big Sick is getting recognition. I don't know why. I haven't seen it, so... But
I don't know how we got to that.
Because you said romantic comedies are more heralded.
The path that we took to get you.
Well, romantic comedies aren't. I mean, for the most part, rom-coms are just as, you know, panned as everything else. But sorry. The Big Sick is getting, like, a lot of...
It was more of an offhand remark, not meant for, like... In-depth analyses.
Judd Apatow sucks.
Okay. You heard it here, folks. Ray's not a fan. Anyway. No, I'm really surprised that it was critically panned like that. But it is interesting that Mel Brooks wrote the music. I love that opening rap. I think it's really, really fun.
Yeah, all the music in that movie is great. Yeah.
I mean, he did the musical before it was... You know, before he could redo it on Broadway.
Right.
Yeah.
The scene where he's, like, doing the shadows behind the thing with the sword. Yeah, the sword.
So funny.
So good.
That was great.
The fact that there's an audience makes it 10 times better. That they sit down, that they've popped corn. Yeah. Like, so good.
So here's a legitimate question about the film.
Oh, here we go.
So at the end of the movie, you know, the locket breaks and the key falls in the lock.
Call the locksmith!
And then it doesn't work. Does that mean that the key was for something else?
I never looked into that as a kid.
I mean, probably. But I don't know what you're looking for with this answer.
Well, because the whole point was supposed to be that they were, you know, meant to be together. It's her true love and all that kind of stuff. But what if that's not the key that was supposed to unlock it? A, where is that key? And B, what was that key supposed to unlock? I'm very curious. You guys don't care at all?
No.
I've never once thought about this. I just figured, well, they're going to weld it off of her. So
yeah. We're going to big saw.
Okay, I was very interested in that. I thought that was kind of interesting.
You're cute. The way your head works is adorable.
I think you're a little weird, but
whatever.
Normal people didn't think about that.
Normal people?
Yeah.
All right, well, what are you going to do?
I'm not going to do anything. Thanks for asking, though.
Any other thoughts on Mel Brooks, his movies, anything like that?
He's a hilarious guy. He seems like he is very genuine and kind and... I wish he was making more stuff.
Yeah, I'd always love to see anything else that he would have to offer. You know, there's always rumors he's working on different things. Like I said earlier, Spaceballs 2 is supposed to be in the writing process, which would be really wonderful to see to a certain extent. A little sad at the same time, of course, because, you know, John Candy is no longer with us, and Joan Rivers?
Joan Rivers is not.
Yeah, she died away as well. And, of course, you know, Mel Brooks is probably too old at this point to reprise his role, which is why he hasn't directed in so long, so...
Rick Moranis isn't acting, and there's nothing getting him to come back.
He did a charity thing recently. It was a big Canadian comedy charity event, but I think that's kind of an exception though, because it was for charity, and it was his, you know, his home and things like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Bill Pullman is around, and you know he's still acting. So you know he just did Independence Day, and before that he had a TV show. So
Daphne Zuniga is still an actress. People just don't care about her, which is sad.
Princess Vespa.
No, I know who she is. Okay. I didn't know she was still acting.
Yes.
So there you go. So I mean, they could do something. I don't know necessarily what that would be, but you know, the movie's 30 years old now. So a lot of that cast is just, you know, no longer here. So
yeah,
it's tough. But I don't know. Do you guys have a least favorite Mel Brooks movie?
I mean, none of the ones that I'm familiar with are bad, so I can't really... Yeah. It would be very difficult for me to pick a least favorite of the ones that I'm familiar with, because I like them all.
I mean, there are some that I'm just not really in the mood to watch all the time. I couldn't watch Young Frankenstein every single day. I couldn't. I really have no desire to ever rewatch Silent Movie or High Anxiety. They were funny for what they were, but there's a reason why we're not talking about them right now.
I actually really didn't like Silent Movie.
That makes sense.
I didn't really, I get what he was trying to accomplish, but it just wasn't for me, so.
Well, the silent films were slapstick anyway, because you had to be over the top without words.
And... Yeah, but that was the thing, like, those movies did what they did because they had to.
Right.
Rather than these other genres that did what they did because they wanted to. And his parodies of these other genres worked because he was making fun of these choices that everybody made. Whereas the silent films, they were that way because the technology kind of forced them to be that way.
Right.
And so it just didn't really work for me, because at the end of the day, he just made like a mediocre silent movie. So.
Yeah, when you just have a visual medium and nothing else, of course, you're going to gravitate towards the... comedians like Charlie Chaplin, like that guy was a physical comedian before there was such a thing, and of course the camera loved him.
All right, well then Ryan, why don't you tell us what this new plan is for our Patreon?
Okay, so I have two things regarding Patreon to talk about. The first one is that we're going to start doing a new Patreon video. We've been trying to do Patreon videos and failing.
It's so difficult to get us all together in one room.
We're gonna try something new. So what we're going to do is, if you're not on Patreon, it's one of our rewards. I mean, no matter what tier I think it is, you get the Patreon video.
The video, yeah.
It's supposed to be every month,
yeah.
Which we're going to try and stick to now. we're basically going to... So for this first month, what we're going to do is for August, we're going to probably next week, we're going to come up with two or three movie scenes that we think are iconic movie scenes. And we're going to throw them into our chat, and we're going to take votes and have somebody pick a scene. And that scene we're going to try and recreate, spending no money and nothing but Derek's time. And that's going to be our Patreon video each month.
We're going
to
recreate.
And it doesn't have to be movie scenes. We can do TV scenes, too. I know there's some Scrubs scenes that Derek would love to be a part of.
All of them.
You know, and I think we can come up with some cool stuff, but... yeah, we might pull some of our costumes out of the closet, or, you know, Batman might come over to help out, or John and Ian are going to be involved in this too.
I'd like to volunteer to be the T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Okay, we're probably not going to do that one first. We don't have the CGI budget for that, but we will probably do it at least up for vote. But every month after August, we're going to actually send a poll out to the patrons and have them be the ones that pick it. So if you want any say in the movies that we do... contribute a dollar, contribute $5, $100, you know, whatever.
Every little bit helps.
Every big bit helps, too.
Because of the flood, we have to replace a couple of things. Not much, but we need to get some new lights, because some of ours are underwater and things like that. So, Doc Rev wants a scene. This would be an original scene where Rey is saying that The Rock is the greatest actor.
Wow, people really want that.
So
two people.
No, Derek wants that too.
Yeah, three people.
Three people.
That might happen. We'll figure out another way to get that to happen. Me and Derek want that to happen as much as Stalker wants that to happen. So that will happen one way or another. It may not be acted out. It may be in text form, but we'll figure it out.
Now, for next week we are going to be talking about The Dark Tower, which is the new Idris Elba, Matthew McConaughey movie that comes out this weekend.
There are no women's in it, by the way.
None at all. It's those two guys and like a kid.
Yep.
And that's the movie.
And a tower, so I hear.
Maybe the tower is...
A woman?
A woman? I don't know.
Cool. I'm good with it.
Anyway, next week's episode, as far as format goes, was probably going to be a little bit different because I am not going to physically be here. So we're going to try a couple of things. So Ray and Ryan will be here. And I am going to call in. And I'm very confident that this is going to work. So
it's not going to work.
It's going to work.
Tune in for the flaming dumpster fire.
It's going to be flaming dumpster fire. Kind of redundant. Ian's just over at the house all the time now. So.
And he's seeing the movie, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be great. It'll be great.
So, one other thing on the Patreon.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
We did a kind of a reward system last month. Derek kind of touched on it. I thought it was fun, and we ended up getting a little bit more money, which is the goal. We're not hiding that fact. So I think that for August, we'll do the same deal. If we get an additional $20 or four new patrons at whatever level they want. If Derek mentions Star Trek... Again, we're going to stick with our fandoms. We're going
to
do it.
No, not agreeing to it for September.
Well, it's too late. You already agreed to it.
We have a Star Trek episode.
Okay,
but
what's another fandom that you mentioned? Okay, Rachel, what's another fandom that we...
I mean, we could pick a particular actor, like Will Smith.
Mm, okay, Will Smith. We'll do that. If Derek mentions Will Smith, then Derek has to write
a
500...
When does Bright come out?
Doesn't matter. Derek has to write a 500-word... report for our website about why Nicolas Cage would have been a better Rocky than Sylvester Stallone. And
in the same time period?
No. I think it should be Nicolas Cage should be a better choice than anybody.
Yes. And especially better than Sylvester Stallone. Basically why he would be
sorry, Big Will. Not happening. I'm just not going to mention Will Smith.
Okay. Well, that's then don't spend your $20, people, because Derek has just refused it. So it doesn't matter. Thank you for thinking about giving us your money, though. Derek just wants to ruin everything.
I ruin everything. It's true.
But yes, give us your money anyway, and Derek, we will goad him into saying Will Smith at least once, because he's a brilliant writer, and even if he doesn't write it, then Rachel will edit something to make it seem like he wrote it, and make it especially embarrassing.
A deal is a deal. Of course I would write it.
Yeah. See? So, and Rachel won't edit it too heavily, but yes, we're going to do that.
I mean, she reviews most of my work.
Exactly.
It's always good to have a second set of eyes.
Maybe a third if I get to look at it, too.
Sure, if you want to.
Anyway, so the first $20, and beyond that, we'll work out some other stuff with Rachel and I, of course. And eventually, one of these months, we'll switch it up, because Derek is going to be getting the short end of the stick 2 months in a row.
Well,
so.
Doc Rev wants you, Ryan, to write about why Jack Black is the greatest actor.
Okay, well, that may be the next reward. We'll work on that, but... or maybe that may be the first reward for the next month.
Why Jack Black would be a better Peter Venkman.
Do you see the repulse?
Anyway, thanks for joining us this week, guys.
Alright, thanks everybody.
Give us your money.
We'll catch you guys next week. Check us out at heroespodcasts.com, at heroespodcasts on all the social medias. Check us out. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.